So that was intellectualization. So there's no right brain versus left brain. Your entire body is used by the Holy Spirit or by the ego, and that is up to you. It's up to you. In every moment, it's up to you. And that's what's so cool about the powerful use of denial. It could be used by either the Holy Spirit or the ego. And it goes on to say, withdrawal. Withdrawal is properly employed in the service of withdrawing from the meaningless. It is not a device for escape, but for consolidation. There is only one mind. And the thing about withdrawal is, I used to withdraw a lot from people. I would tell myself a story and I'd believe it, and then I would think I would be okay if I would just separate further. And that's the ego's use of withdrawal. Who here hasn't isolated ever? I myself did enough for all of you. But withdrawal, under the ego, isolates. It cuts off your nose to spite your face. It says, I will be okay without this, I will be okay without this, and your world gets smaller, 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 and you feel more and more alone, which was the very thing you didn't want to feel in the first place, which is why you withdrew in the first place, and it's this perpetual cycle until you stop and say, whatever it is that I'm telling myself, I have got to find another way. So withdrawal with the Holy Spirit is used in an opposite way. It says, you know, I tell myself a story that it is this person, this place, this thing that's making me lose my peace. But instead, I'm going to withdraw from that story. And I'm going to ask for the truth instead. I'm going to withdraw from the story, not the person. Because when I withdraw from the person, I make them more guilty in my mind, and I end up more afraid. When I withdraw from the situation, I am affirming the error in my mind that anything that's going on in that situation has the power to hurt me. And I'm going to be more and more in resistance rather than acceptance, so there goes my peace. When I base my serenity, my peace, on any person, place, or thing being a certain way, it's a complete setup, because there is something going on that is triggering up a thought that is going to allow me to heal and to free my will to be free. If I ask what it is that's bothering me, what it is I see, and what is the truth instead. Now, this is not to say that we don't leave a situation or we don't end a relationship or whatever we feel guided to do in that moment. It's just that we don't decide for ourselves based on a story that we have. We want to heal the story first. We want to pause. We want to pray. We want to open up to what the truth is instead. And then from that own inner guidance, we will know intuitively what to do. So we just don't make that decision from fear and from guilt and from shame. We don't do that. If we make that decision from that, we are affirming what the ego wants, which is further separation by withdrawal. So we go on to dissociation. Dissociation is quite similar. You should split off or dissociate yourself from error, but only in defense of integration. Again, you don't dissociate from your brother. You don't dissociate from reality. You dissociate from error. And to dissociate is to disidentify. To stop identifying with error. To stop identifying with the story. To dissociate. Of course, we all know other ways of dissociation which the ego cleverly uses. And that is, I'm not here. Any place but here. Anybody but you. Anybody but me. Any time but now. That's dissociation. Checking out. Bye-bye. Drugs, alcohol, fantasies, romance novels, soap operas, whatever. Bring it on. Let's dissociate. Let's check out. Let's check out. And the Holy Spirit says, please don't check out. Check in. Check in. Check in to why it is that you feel the need to run, that you feel the need to distance, and ask what's going on, and bring that up and have it healed. Correct your mind. Dissociate from the power, from the validity of it. Just dissociate from it. And ask for the truth instead. Okay, so the next one is detachment. Detachment is essentially a weaker form of dissociation. There is a saying I learned a while ago, detach, but detach with love. Have you guys heard of that? Detach, but detach with love. And for a while, when I first started detaching, and I detached from a situation or a person or whatever, it was because in that moment, I really, really believed that they were the problem. It was the problem. And so I would pull myself back. I would detach. I would just disconnect, detach from them. But when I did it, what I did was I kept the error real in my mind. I kept the belief that they were guilty. It was wrong. I am the victim. Detach with love is a form of acceptance, really accepting that people are exactly where they are in their curriculum, in their awakening, and that if I have a problem and I'm suffering, that problem's in my own mind. Because only my own attack thoughts can hurt me. So I detach from what I think I know and ask for the truth instead of detaching from my brother. The next one is flight. Flight can be undertaken in whatever direction you choose, but note that the concept itself implies flight from something. Flight from error is perfectly appropriate. We know about fight or flight, either attack or retreat. We want to run away, we want to make them guilty again, but instead, we move away from that which we're thinking. We ask for the truth instead. It's not ever the person, place, or thing that causes us to suffer. It is only our own mind. It is only our perception. And the nature of perception is that we think a thought and we believe it. And if it's a thought that's not based on love, that's not based on the truth, we will feel guilt and fear. And we will not like the way we feel. And so we will hurl it out into the world, onto our brother, onto the egos that we make for our brother. And we will look to see it in the world, not in our minds, not where it started, but out there, somewhere out there. And then we do. And it affirms not only the belief in guilt and fear, whatever that belief is, but it adds on this belief that now we are the victims of it, that we are not at cause, but we are at effect. And when we believe we're at effect and not cause, we really do feel like the victim, and there is nothing we can do. But when we take our power back, instead of running from and making them that much more guilty, that much more powerful in our mind, we take our power back, not by attack, not by retreat, but by questioning our perception so that we might heal that thought that is driving that bus to cause us to look into the world and see guilt. That was actually a really big one for me. I mean, between dissociation and detachment, withdrawal and flight, I spent an enormous amount of my childhood alone. I spent an enormous amount of time in my head and isolated and spinning the same stories over and over again about why I needed to do that and that I was trapped, feeling like the perpetual victim. You know, and that was the misuse of denial. I was denying the power of my own mind. I was denying my true identity. And so powerful am I that I could convince myself how little vulnerable and weak I was. There are many acronyms for fear, F-E-A-R, like false evidence appearing real, or face everything and recover. But one of my favorites was F everything and run. F everything and run. As soon as I was scared, I was out of there. And I just kept building that fear in my mind because I just kept affirming by my actions that what I thought was true and that the action I was taking was to protect myself. But in our defenselessness, our safety lies. And flight in the use of the ego is a defense against truth. Against truth. Because in that moment, we choose not to hear the truth instead. So the next one is distanciation, which is pretty similar from flight and withdrawal. and detachment. They're all pretty similar, but you can see how we use them in the world with the ego and how we use them with the Holy Spirit. But distantiation can be properly used as a way of putting distance between yourself and what you should fly from in your mind, not out there. And regression is an effort to return to your own original state. It can thus be utilized to restore rather than to go back to the less mature. Now, in case some of you don't know how it is that we experience regression in illusion, if you've ever been in an experience where, well, this is a really common one, I'll use this one. Let's say you haven't lived with your parents for a really long time and you have your own life, you have your own job, you're married, you have kids, etc. And then you go home for the holidays and you see your parents and now you feel like a child. You feel like the interaction with them is taking you back 20 years or 10 years. That's regression. When somebody goes back to an earlier time, an earlier part of their story, still it is the illusion. Still it is the story. Still it is the ego's perspective. That is the ego's use of and the experience of regression. But the Holy Spirit's is unlearning. To unlearn is to regress to your true state. It's a funny paradox because we actually learn to unlearn. We remember. We recognize. We recognize. We let go of all we thought that was not true and regress to our true state. A lot of times people are terrified of feeling their feelings because they're afraid they will regress to a child state. Or when somebody has post-traumatic stress disorder, they're afraid that they will regress to a very scary time in their lives where they felt so powerless. But when we ask of everything, what is it for? And we say, I would love the truth instead. Whatever I think had happened before or is happening now, it's all the same illusion. I want the truth. I want to know my true self. Sublimation should be a redirection of effort to the sublime. And that really is a basic restatement of regression, that we want purification. We want to go back to the pure state, to the sublime. There are many other so-called dynamic concepts which are profound errors, due essentially to the misuse of defenses. Among them is the concept of different levels of aspiration, which actually result from level confusion. However, the main point to be understood from this section is that you can defend truth as well as error, and in fact, much better. So we don't want to have different levels of aspiration, and we certainly do not want to switch seats on the Titanic looking for a prettier story, a happier illusion. We really don't. And a lot of times when I work with people, and it seems to happen at least once with each person, it seems, there seems to be, well, I just got to tell myself something else. I got to tell myself this is how it is instead, or I got to come up with another way of looking at it or something like that. And that is not how it is. The mind that sees the problem is invested in the belief, is invested in the thought that's driving the bus and cannot correct it. All of its attention and all of its focus and all of its identification and belief, all that power has already been invested in said problem, said belief, said thought. And so the only way we can do this is to realize we don't know in that moment and ask the Holy Spirit to give us the truth instead. And the truth isn't something that comes from out there. The truth is within. It is beyond the veil, underneath whatever it is that we've told ourselves that's not true. So it is already there. It is already there. It's like Michelangelo chipping away at the statue, taking away that which does not belong, revealing what is already there, what does, revealing it. The means are easier to clarify after the value of the goal itself is firmly established. Everyone defends his own treasure. You do not have to tell him to do so, because he will do it automatically. The real questions still remain. What do you treasure? And how much do you treasure it? Once you have learned to consider these two questions and to bring them into all your actions as the true criteria for behavior, I will have little difficulty in clarifying the means. So ask of everything, what is it for? What do you want? What do you value? What is your highest priority? Is it healing? Is it truth? You have not learned to be consistent about this as yet. I have therefore concentrated on showing you that the means are available whenever you ask. You can, however, save a lot of time if you do not extend this step unduly. The correct focus will shorten it immeasurably. Then it talks about really the one true defense, the one true proper use of denial, the most powerful and complete defense that we have, the atonement. The atonement is the only defense which cannot be used destructively. That is, because while everyone must eventually join it, it is not a device which was generated by man. The atonement principle was in effect long before the atonement itself began. The principle was love, and the atonement itself was an act of love. Acts were not necessary before the separation because the time-space belief did not exist. It was only after the separation that the defense of atonement and the necessary conditions for its fulfillment were planned. So the atonement is not a double-edged sword. The ego cannot use the atonement because the atonement is the undoing of the ego. The atonement is the undoing of the ego, the return home. So while we go and question our thoughts, we know where we want to be. We know what we want to see. We want to see sameness. We want to be in the awareness of oneness. It became increasingly apparent that all of the defenses which man can choose to use constructively or destructively that we mentioned earlier were not enough to save him. It was therefore decided that he needed a defense which was so splendid that he could not misuse it, although he could refuse it. He could not misuse it, although he could refuse it. His choice could not, however, turn it into a weapon of attack. It can't be used by the ego, which is the inherent characteristic of all other defenses. The atonement thus becomes the only defense which is not a two-edged sword. And in that whole section, if you guys want to read on, it talks about the atonement in detail. I was in a yoga class. I did Bikram yoga. If you guys are familiar, it's 105 degrees, 90 minutes, with about 30 to 40% humidity. And it was very important that instead of having any story about what I should be doing with my body, whether it's because the instructor is telling us to do it, or because I had a story about how in the past I had pushed myself or my body had worked a certain way, that I just stayed still in my mind and connected in awareness, mindful of the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit would tell me whether or not to do a pose or how long to do a pose and when to stop. And when I left, I realized that one could easily say that, well, I am not a body, I am free, it shouldn't even matter what I do with my body. But that would be the misuse of denial. We don't deny that we think a thought, or that we have something going on, or whatever it is, any perceived limitation. We don't deny that. We offer it all up. We allow everything to be used and corrected by the Holy Spirit. There's a section in A Course in Miracles in which it talks about the body and denial. And it says that the body, if properly understood, shares the invulnerability of the atonement to two-edged application. This is not because the body is a miracle, but because it is not inherently open to misinterpretation. The body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. Its abilities can be and frequently are over-evaluated. However, it is almost impossible to deny its existence in this world. Those who do so are engaging in a particularly unworthy form of denial. The term unworthy here implies only that it is not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful. If one denies this unfortunate aspect of the mind's power, one is also denying the power itself. And my experience with yoga was amazing because it was centering, because my highest purpose was to heal and to know myself. So I don't really feel anything else to say, so I'm not going to gab from the ego if the Holy Spirit doesn't have anything left for me. I'm just going to close this out with a little prayer, and then I'm going to turn this over early to you, Dove. I'm going to close my eyes and say how grateful I am that we get to learn how our mind works and what we can do in our part to speed up our awakening, that we can be able to discern with the Holy Spirit, that we can recognize when we're misusing a defense, whether it's withdrawal, regression, distanciation, sublimation, detachment. That I want to use the proper use of denial so that I may know myself with a capital S truly. Thank you so much. Namaste, everyone. Good night.